This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good evening. You are listening to Lee Chui Lin and Kelvin Yee.
And it's sort of a kind of an all movie hour today as we look at why a new animated film about a Yeti has caused some diplomatic tension. You can call 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio. All this coming up on the Evening Edition.
BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
It's coming along to 7:12 in the evening. You're with Lin and Kelvin. And okay, so I know that we've been telling you all about this film. It's actually a way to talk about something else, but let's hear a little clip from it first.
There's a Yeti on my roof. Hey, boy.
Poor girl.
So we're actually talking about China's Nine Dash Line in the South China Sea. And this has come back into the spotlight, if it ever left, because of an animated film that's causing some diplomatic tensions. That Yeti on the roof there, it's a movie called Abominable. And yeah, I think, Kelvin, you want to tell people why it's been a bit problematic?
Sure. How do we start this? Aside from looking like a pretty cute animation about Yeti and its home on the Everest, there's also a scene in this movie that shows China's Nine Dash Line in the South China Sea. So cue the controversy and an avalanche of problems.
Yeah, and that's because the Nine Dash Line, which was formerly at various points in history, the 11 Dash Line and the never joined together line, it's always a dash. The U-shaped line is actually used on Chinese maps to illustrate its territorial claims over vast expanses of the resource-rich South China Sea, which of course is also known as the West Philippine Sea, depending on who you're speaking to. And the areas in question include areas that have been claimed by other countries, such as Taiwan, Vietnam, the Philippines, Brunei, and of course, Malaysia.
So just over the weekend, it was announced that Abominable won't be shown in Malaysia for this very reason. At first, it was green-lighted to be shown, but Universal Pictures has declined to cut out the scene as demanded by our censorship board. And Vietnam's also decided to pull the movie from cinemas, and Philippines wants the scene to be cut, but they also called for a boycott of the movie.
Man, I love that. That's the pettiest of reactions. Yeah. It's like, we want you to take it out, and after that, after you've done what we want, we still don't want anyone to go and watch it. And, you know, this, of course, leads us to talk a little bit about why that part of the sea is so highly contested. And it's complex, it's based in historical reasons, and it has a lot to do with the issue, depending on who you speak to, it's either about sovereignty, or it's about security, or it's about resources in the sea, because basically it kind of extends China's claim to its historical right, I suppose, in terms of what it covers, where it covers. Yeah. And that eats into, yeah, various countries, like we said earlier.
Yeah, I think on the point of security, it's because it's increasing that buffer zone and how soon they can build those naval bases if they were to face an attack just over the seas. Food makes sense, right? They have also a large population to feed, and food security is constantly on their minds.
Yes, and so we could talk about, like we said, any number of those things. It's a really interesting topic. While researching it, I kind of fell into a hole about suzerainty and just like suddenly became a little bit of a nerd. Suddenly became a little bit of a nerd over this issue of sovereignty and what it means. But suffice to say that when we look at the South China Sea, or West Philippine Sea, it holds pretty significant oil and gas reserves. So some people think that that's what this is about. But the other reason, and like you said earlier, Kelvin, that's come up time and time again, is this you know, notion that there's a lot of fish there. And so who does the fish belong to when people go out and fish for them? Fishing stocks, of course, have been in decline in the region because of overfishing. So we are going to be looking specifically at that today.
Now, joining us is Dr. Ashura Salih, who's an independent consultant on maritime security and regional politics. Dr. Ashura, thank you so much for joining us this evening. Could you talk to us about the current situation in terms of fisheries in the South China Sea? How have the fish stocks in the region fared over the years?
Sure. The fishery resources in the South China Sea is actually quite rampant. In fact, it attracts almost more than half of the world's fisheries vessels as of now. In terms of fishing stocks, this actually means that around 12% of the entire world's global catch come from the South China Sea. But unfortunately, with the situation we currently have in the South China Sea as of now, what we are suffering from is what we can see a tragedy of the commons, where we have a lot of fishermen being exposed to and having access to the same resources that are very fluid. You know, they come across all these different exclusive economic zones. And so this has eventually led to overfishing. And unfortunately, total fishing stocks in the South China Sea have actually depleted by 70 to 95% since the 1950s. And so I feel that if this pattern is to continue, especially without strict monitoring, control and surveillance systems and frameworks, overfishing is just going to become more and more rampant in the South China Sea.
Right. But, you know, is there a reason why we still don't have strict frameworks in place to prevent overfishing?
Not particularly. I feel that Southeast Asia would definitely benefit from having a type of regional fisheries management organization. It's known in the literature as RFMO. But as far as I know, I don't think this currently exists in the South China Sea. But having such an organization would definitely encourage the joint management of fisheries. But a caveat that we should keep in mind is that if you were to have such an organization, it does come with its set of challenges as well, which includes taking into consideration the numerous interests of the representatives of the different member nations that may come under such a regional organization. But the closest there is within the region to setting a quota on trying to moderate the fishing stocks would usually exist at the national level. In fact, we have countries like Indonesia, Philippines, Thailand, Vietnam, and they have all set up these national fisheries legislation that set these benchmarks themselves. So there isn't a particularly there's no particularly obstacle that is stopping these countries from forming such a regional move towards setting these fish limits. But I feel we're just heading towards that as of now.
Is the fisheries situation made more complicated in any way by the territorial dispute?
Definitely. I feel that, you know, obviously not having a clear boundary of the different exclusive economic zones or EEZs does definitely complicate and does not set the clear jurisdictions for fishermen. But I think what we also need to keep in mind is that the declining fishery stocks have been taking place is actually a product of decades and decades of unsustainable fishing practices and poor fishery management. And it has only recently come in light due to the South China Sea dispute. But in actual fact, the depleting fishery stocks has been taking place way before the South China Sea became a particular point of contention. And in moving forward, I feel that there will be more effort to try clearly negotiate these boundaries. In fact, a good example that we can look at is the earlier ramming incident this year between Vietnam and Indonesia near the Natuna Islands. But I feel that this incident is also particularly significant because it does demonstrate the country's willingness to want to resolve these overlapping borders through negotiations in order to avoid future similar incidents over competing fishery stocks.
Right. You know, and while we were looking this up, we actually came across a term that we hadn't heard before, which was fishing nationalism. And observers have actually commented how dwindling fish supplies can lead to this, you know, fishing nationalism. Could you explain to us what the term actually means?
Definitely. I think it's like the new term now within the debate on fishery stocks. But fishing nationalism is largely used in reference to when fishermen are being used as proxies to defend a state's maritime jurisdiction over a particular territorial area. Adopting this focus, however, once again, detracts attention from the dwindling fish stocks, and countries within the region would in fact focus on their overlapping and competing claims, rather than looking into solutions towards regional collaboration. And unlike, you know, territory, undersea resources or fisheries are highly migratory. So they move across these zones that border our region. And so we are unable, or rather we should not think in terms of fishing nationalism and deploying our fishermen out to get fishery stocks. But because we all share these resources, the solution is rather in establishing regional coordinating frameworks rather than thinking very in terms of these geopolitical structures.
Who is affected the most by the reduced amount of fish stocks in the South China Sea?
Yeah, I think that's a really important question, because when we think of dwindling fish stocks, we think in terms of the coastal communities that rely very heavily on these fish stocks, not just for their food source, but also for their livelihood. In fact, dwindling fish stocks is actually an outcome of overfishing, which is a product of illegal, unreported, and unregulated fishing. And these are three different types of illicit activities that surround fishing. And so when we think of it in terms of these perspectives, we can see that dwindling fish stocks not only affect the coastal communities, but can also affect the region's economy and also national security interests as well. And so this lends a very humane light to the territorial disputes, especially where if we're unable to come up with regional collaborative solutions, coastal communities are impacted, their livelihoods are impacted. And so because they are no longer able to rely on the profits that they usually get from their fishing industries, most of them are being coerced by criminal networks to use their fishing tools and instead participate in crimes associated with IUU fishing. So then they take part in smuggling, trafficking, transshipment, and then you then involve and welcome a whole host of, you know, undesirable social elements into the country's social structure. And economically, this can also impact the region where Southeast Asia lost 2.5 million tons of fish, or a third of the region's entire catch, to IUU fishing. And so if you were to get back to square one, we can see that overfishing or dwindling fish stocks is actually an outcome of these illicit activities, and also rather an outcome of weak regulatory frameworks. And it may facilitate the territorial disputes, but it also has a very strong humane element that goes unconsidered, actually, or rather understudied.
Right. And, you know, you mentioned just then that fish stocks from the South China Sea actually make up about 12% of the global catch. So the increased scarcity in the region actually have a global impact in that sense?
Yeah, definitely. In fact, I think that if we don't work together soon and try to participate in more regional frameworks, the fact that 12% of the world's catch comes from our region would only further escalate this trend, where it is expected that by 2050, global fishing stocks around the world could mostly collapse. And that's not far from now. So, yeah.
Have there been collaborative efforts to address the issue, and how well have they worked out so far?
Regionally speaking, I am aware that the Southeast Asian Fisheries Development Center, CFDEC, was set up to try aid in regional collaboration. And most of their efforts is they're primarily focused on the fact that a lot of fishery stock is transboundary, so it's very fluid. And so they feel that in resolving the unsustainable fishery stocks, they are trying to come up with solutions in regional collaboration. And I think in 2016, a joint ASEAN CFDEC declaration was announced to try promote regional fisheries collaboration. But on a more technical level, I am aware that recently satellite tracking technology has been used to produce information that is made publicly available. So this information encourages transparency and traceability, where national security agencies and policy agencies will be able to use this database and actually track illicit fishing vessels or illicit activities, where they're able to see vessels that move beyond the normal trajectory of most fishing vessels. And so this helps with policy development as well. I am aware that there are also marine protected areas. One area that we could look at potentially would be the Turtle Islands Heritage Protected Area between Philippines and Malaysia. I think that sets a very good precedence on regional collaboration. There are also a lot of growing grassroots initiatives, especially amongst coastal communities. There is also a growing awareness on how our food supply chain damages the marine environment, and I feel this heavily influences our demand for seafood. Currently, you know, we're all focused on plastics and marine pollution, but perhaps by being more aware of how unsustainable fishing practices like trawling or cyanide or fish bombing is all involved in bringing seafood to our table, I feel we are then able to influence our demand for more sustainable fishing practices. So there are current tools out there in the region that we can use. They currently exist. There is also strong national legislation. But we all just need to be a bit more committed to these frameworks and try implement these regulations a lot more.
Dr. Ashura, thank you so much for speaking with us. That was Dr. Ashura Saleh, independent consultant on maritime security and regional politics, weighing in on the issue of food security, or really fishing stocks in the South China Sea. This is coming after a movie called Abominable will not be making it to our local cinemas because of their depiction of the Nine Dash Line. And so we just wanted to talk about the various issues that are going into the South China Sea, really looking into the tensions surrounding the region. And keep it here on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.